At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'll be your host today on this beautiful Thursday, April 11th, 2024. And our goal here today is the same as our goal 5 days a week, and that is to help make you a better informed investor so that you can reach your financial goals. And to accomplish that, as always, we talk about various stories that I find interesting, that I think you'll find interesting. And more importantly, we answer your finance and investment questions. So my phone lines are open. Feel free to call anytime at 888-99-CHART. You know the number. And with that being said, we'll talk about the market in a little bit and run down the show topics I have for you today, but not before we answer our first question now.
I was looking to get your opinion on a growth dividend stock, TGLS, Technoglass Inc. I was just wondering if this is a good buy now, or at what price would you guys think that this will be a good buy? Thanks for everything. Hope to hear this on the show later. Bye.
So Technoglass Inc., TGLS, makes windows. They make windows for commercial and for residential construction. And so if you look at their geographic breakdown, it looks like most of the revenue comes from the United States, about 95% of it. And most of that is from that windows and architecture rather than the glass and framing segment. It's a small cap company, about $2.7 billion in market cap. And it's got very minimal debt, about $170 million. And so over the past 5 years, it's done very well. It's up 66%, which is 50 more percent than the S&P 500 and 44% more than the industry. And that's because they've had some pretty significant revenue growth, up 17.6% annualized over the past 5 years. Now, a lot of that, granted, came during the pandemic years when people were remodeling, there was a lot of construction going on, people were buying homes, people were investing in the homes they already had. So in 2023, that growth certainly didn't manifest itself the same way it did during the pandemic. And their margins have slipped a little bit, down from 23% in 2022. I'm sorry, down from 21.7. Actually, they're up from 21.7 to 21.9 heading into this year, and projected to, towards the end of this year, dip off a little bit. So their profitability overall, I'd say, is actually stable. And their cash flows are improving. And because of that, over the past 5 months, they've grown from about $35 a share to where they stand now, which is about $59 a share. Overall, it looks like a good business. They issued a little bit of shares over the past 5 years, but not too much. And their earnings projections have been pretty flat. For me, though, when you think about why this company did so well over the past 5 years, those dynamics have changed a little bit, right? We're headed into a persistently higher rate environment, a higher inflationary environment, where construction is certainly an issue. We do need more homes. There is a lack of housing supply within this country, and people are feeling that in their pocketbooks. But overall, I don't think the macro picture facilitates the kind of growth that they've seen in the first part of the 2020s. That doesn't change the fact that it's a good company, but if you look at their relative price right now, they're trading at a PDE of about 14, which is above their 5-year average of 10. Their price to book is at 5.1. The industry standard is 0.5 over the past 5 years, and their average is 3.5. So it looks a little overpriced to me. I like the company. I would maybe keep it on your watch list, but right now is not the right time to buy it. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so. So here's some of what we have planned, time permitting. Our main focus point concerns this question: does the Fed have a real problem on its hands? This so-called super core inflation, we'll tell you all about that, measures services excluding food, energy, housing, and it has been roaring higher lately, up more than 8% at a 3-month annualized pace. So in order to dig into that, we'll talk about inflation, the Federal Reserve, and housing prices in 2024. Also, We'll talk a little bit about banks. I've been talking a lot about banks this week and what bank earnings mean. So what are expectations? Why do we care? We'll also talk about how money market prime funds are going to be changing for institutional investors. The SEC is changing some rules surrounding money market prime funds as a result of some of the instability during the pandemic year. So what does that mean for you? What does that mean for institutions? What does that mean for companies? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about everybody's favorite shiny metal, and that is gold. China, a bunch of other countries have been buying gold, but also consumers have been buying gold, and they've been doing it at one of my favorite wholesale stores. But before we dig into that, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks ended higher after being down in the early part of the day following CPI yesterday and PPI released today. Growth stocks and momentum stocks did pretty well. The equal weight S&P lagged the official S&P 500 index. Large caps doing well. The best outperformers today was tech, home builders, media, airlines. Lagging behind were banks. As we look forward to bank earnings on Friday, investment banks, insurers, energy, autos. The dollar was a little changed after yesterday's strengthening of about 1%. Gold finished up 1%. We'll talk some more about gold later. And PPI came in. That was the big news today. So it was in line for core, providing a little bit of relief from the narrative of yesterday, which was the hotter than expected CPI, which led to some Fed repricing and some overall hawkish sentiment. So in the wake of that, economists who had been thinking core PCE later this month might come in hotter than expected, in the wake of PPI, they pushed those estimates downward. March headline PPI was down to 20 basis points, cooler than expectations. Core PPI was also 20 basis points, which was in line with expectations. Initial claims came in as well today, below estimates, though continuing claims were higher than expected. Overall, with PPI, the Fed revised up its forecast in spite of it. For the PCE, they revised their forecast up for 2024, and Barkin said that the latest CPI and PPI readings certainly didn't inspire any confidence for the disinflation narrative. So, you know, overall, like I've been saying, I'll be looking forward to bank earnings tomorrow, what that says about the sector and what that says about the market as a whole. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll tackle your finance and investment questions. We have a bunch of voicemails ready to play and a bunch of YouTube questions, but we'd like to hear from you live. So call now to our InvestTalk hotline, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Hi, Justin and Steve. This is Tyler from Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm quite an amateur investor. Is it a good idea to essentially mirror their investments, but only really invest when their stocks are on sale, you know, say a PE of less than 15. Is that a good idea to get in, take position into these stocks at a good price over the long term? Looking forward to your answer on the show. Thanks. Bye.
Yes. The answer is yes. I've said it before that it's not enough to invest in good businesses because you can invest in great businesses that are incredibly expensive. What you should be looking for is great businesses at a fair price. And so one of the metrics you can look at to decide if something is a fair price is, what is it trading relative to its future earnings? What is it trading relative to its asset base? What is it trading relative to its cash flows? So just as important as good companies are fair prices. So certainly you should be looking for companies and only buying into them if they're trading at fair prices. Thanks for the call. Now, our main focus point today concerns this question. Does the Fed have a real problem on its hands? And in order to think about that, we're going to look at super core inflation, which is a gauge that measures services, excluding food and energy. So that's what normal core is. But super core takes a step further and excludes housing as well. And so this is something that is going to be very important to the Federal Reserve looking forward. It's going to be important to consider what housing prices in 2024 are going to look like and how that is going to affect inflation as a whole. So overall CPI has increased 3.5% year over year in March. Already above expectations. We talked about that earlier in the week. It was the big news that drove the market down yesterday. But looking deeper is another metric that a lot of people don't talk about. A lot of people talk about core inflation, removing food and energy prices because of the volatility. But there's also super core inflation, which has recently caught the attention of economists and the Federal Reserve and investors alike. So this measure goes beyond the traditional core CPI by also removing shelter and rent costs from its service reading. Why would you do that? Well, elevated housing inflation, frankly, doesn't stick around. And so the Fed views it as a temporary problem. It's not really reflective of the underlying price trends in other parts of the market. So interestingly, if you take a look at super core inflation, it accelerated to a pace of 4.8% year over year in March, significantly higher than CPI and core CPI. In fact, that's the highest mark in 11 months. And when analyzing data from the last 3 months exclusively, and annualizing that, we're looking at a super core inflation rate of more than 8%, significantly higher than what the Fed is comfortable with, 2%. So the persistence of this elevated inflation rate, particularly within super core, is very problematic because the Fed is trying to make a decision about when or even if they can cut rates. And so if this metric remains higher, because they believe it is a better way of looking at actual price trends, they won't be able to do that. And a lot of this inflation stubbornness is due to non-discretionary expenditures, right? We're talking about cars, housing insurance, property taxes. These aren't areas where consumers can easily cut back. You can't not pay your property. Well, you can not pay your property taxes, but that's not going to be a good thing. And so the Fed's in a difficult position. And it's also being exacerbated by a lower consumer savings rate and higher borrowing costs, meaning that the Fed may need to maintain a more restrictive monetary policy stance, frankly, until something breaks. Now, while some believe, including myself, maybe down the road, that further rate hikes are a possibility in order to combat persistent inflation, others think it'll eventually decline, leading to rate cuts. But albeit probably later than they originally expected. And so this all begs the question, has inflation become entrenched? We've been saying for some time that we live in an inflationary environment. And there are a lot of drivers of that. We talked about it a couple days ago. The EV revolution, higher borrowing costs associated with housing, lower housing supplies, a lot of things that are driving prices higher, reshoring. And so at what point will the Fed need to hike more? We don't know. It's not an easy problem and there's no easy answer. And all of this underscores once again that nobody can truly predict what is going to happen in the future. It is too complex of a problem. The people that said 7 cuts earlier in the year are now saying 2. They don't know. And so it's best that you prepare your portfolio, diversify your portfolio for all possibilities. This is Invest Talk, now with over 58.4 million downloads, and it's all thanks to you. I hope to hear from you over this next 40 minutes, so give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
You know I love live calls, so let's take a live call now. Gary in San Jose, you got a question about ET. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I own it in four IRAs.
Four?
And the reason, four of them, and I split it between my wife and myself and Roth and so forth. So the reason I did it was that it's a limited partnership, correct?
Yes.
And
that is correct.
Get a K-1 or a K-10 or K-1 if you had it in a regular account. So I'm just trying to minimize any dividend taxation on it, and I know that there's some other way that they would tax it if it comes up in certain categories. And I was just wondering if you knew what those categories were, like I think it's a UB something or anyway, are you familiar with that?
Off the top of my head, I'm unfortunately not familiar with that. I think when people tend to call with these tax questions, given the complexity and the real risks of owing the tax man money, I always defer to, you know, asking tax professionals. I don't want to be
all
on
right.
the hook for you going to jail for not paying your taxes. So I would say consult a tax professional. They will know certainly better than I do, but I appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you.
Now, from time to time, other than live calls, we also receive InvestTalk questions from the YouTube comment section of our InvestTalk channel. And here's one that just came in. I'm looking to enter the REIT space and would like your analysis on Cube, C-U-B-E, versus a broader play on WPC. So let's start with WPC. It is a very large REIT, WP Carry, and they are a pretty broadly diversified commercial REIT. So looking at their top tenants, as this slowly loads for our YouTube viewers, you see various types of companies, U-Haul, Extra Space Storage, all types of commercial retail spaces. Now, a smaller company is CubeSmart Real Estate Investment Trust. CubeSmart is about a $9 billion manager that specializes specifically in self-storage. And so if you look at their price performance over the past 52 weeks, Cube is only down 8%, while WPC is down about 22%. And so Cube has performed better over the past year. And a lot of that is because of the sticky nature of their asset base. I've mentioned before, I really like storage REITs. I like storage REITs because, much like subscription services, people set it and they forget it. And that's bad for the consumer because they're spending money month over month that they probably shouldn't be spending. But it's great for the business. Next time Justin's on, ask him about his storage locker he's had for years, right? So, you know, I think that especially in times when REITs are going to underperform, like in a rising rate environment with potentially unstable economic predictions, a lot of people thought we'd be in a recession by now, REITs didn't do too hot. But ones that had sticky user bases, sticky asset bases, sticky revenue streams, they did pretty well. So, you know, I don't think you can go wrong with fully diversified REITs. I think that's a good call. But if you wanted to specialize and pick one type of REIT, I like storage REITs. Thanks for the question, and thank you for looking at our InvestTalk channel. Now, let's shift over to a conversation that I guess I've been teasing all week, and that is bank earnings. And banks have generally been navigating through a tumultuous period, stretching all the way back to March of last year. And despite big banks achieving record profits in 2023, now there's a multitude of challenges that they're, let's say, looking forward to. And that involves increasing losses in commercial real estate, bond portfolios, underperformance in the stock market. So it seems that there's a bunch of hurdles. And so this week, we're looking forward to major banks like JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, all household names, announcing their first quarter earnings. And sure, we care how they fared in the first quarter of the year. That's all important information, but markets are forward-looking. So we're going to be looking to their forward guidance because that tells us a lot about the prevailing conditions, not just within the sector, but the market overall. Because one of the critical areas we need to focus on is commercial real estate, because banks hold approximately 50% of all debt backing office, retail, and other non-residential properties in the U.S. So the sector is especially vulnerable should there be issues within commercial real estate, commercial property. And Powell has even hinted, Jerome Powell, has hinted at the possibility of more bank failures, partly due to corrections within property. Think about New York Community Bank Corp, who recently got a $1 billion emergency injection following a surge in real estate loan losses. And that's not it. Beyond commercial real estate, banks are grappling with increasing write-downs on credit cards, auto loans, not to mention their security portfolios taking losses on long-duration bonds. And so the sector generally, I've said before and will continue to say, and a lot of people agree, is the canary in the coal mine, because they're the backbone, right? They're the providers of capital to the whole system. So slowing loan demand due to rising debt costs and competitive pressures for customer deposits are not great for business. So looking forward to tomorrow and the next couple of weeks, I will certainly be paying attention. I think you should as well, because it can have a lot of implications for your life, a lot of businesses, and your investment portfolio. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Is it safe to say that a bearish technical breakdown indicates further weakness? Traders may still be speculating on a June rate cut, and investor optimism has shown a slight decline. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
We're lucky we have another live call. Jim from San Francisco, you had a question for us?
Yeah, hey, real quick, I've learned a lot from you, especially you. I got out of PG&E, thank God. You were a smart man for telling me that. Real quick question, robo-advisor, yay or nay?
Robo-advisor, yay or nay?
With the Schwab account right now, looking at the robo-advisor, the premium, and they'd steal $300 and a 0.25%.
You know, I'm not, it's I think that robo-advisors generally lose a lot of the benefit that you have with a real advisor, which is the relationship of somebody that understands you and holds your hand and tells you, hey, you don't want to do that. These are your long-term goals. Let's actually stick with what you told me you wanted to do over 5 years, and you keep reminding me that you want to do every year. So generally speaking, I think that advisors, good advisors, ones that actually listen to you, understand, help with family planning, or rather with financial planning, not family planning, with financial planning, with investments. I think that they definitely make their fee. I think that for some people, robo-advisors work, but I certainly wouldn't put them in the same category of financial advisors, if that makes sense.
Okay, let's throw you this question then.
Okay, two in a row.
What's the track record with them?
I'm sorry?
What do you see, more positive or negative as far as gains and losses?
With robo-advisors?
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I've never used a robo-advisor. So back when I worked at Dimensional Fund Advisors too and ran mutual funds, we didn't work with that type of advisor as well. So, you know, overall, I think it's gonna depend. It's going to depend on what investment strategy they run. It's going to depend on what firm it is. I think you can't really have a one-size-fits-all answer here. If it's not too much, maybe you want to try it for yourself. You know, you make a tiny years-long mistake and you figure out if you like it or not, and then maybe you move back to a real human. And we're always willing to help if you decide to make that move.
Okay. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah. Feel free to call in anytime. Have a good one. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is George from Los Gatos, and I have a question about Hess Corporation, ticker HEES. I'm considering to take a small position, and I would just like to get your opinion. Thank you.
So Hess, H-E-E-S, is H&E Equipment Services, and it rents and sells industrial equipment. So let's take a look at how the company has done over the past 5 years. Pretty stable in terms of revenue growth over the past 3 years, but going back to 2016, not so much. They're kind of all over the place in terms of sales growth. They're up, they're down, they're all around. But overall, 3.5% over the past 5 years. So not anything too crazy, not anything too robust, but stable. Taking a look at their debt levels, looks like their long-term debt has grown a little bit over the past 5 years, from $1.1 billion to $1.4 billion. And they're a $2.3 billion market cap company. So not too much debt for a company that size. Let me take a look at their interest coverage. Yeah, I mean, most of their debt, it looks like it's pushed out at least till 2026. Their interest coverage ratio, even with all that debt, is 4.59. So they're not overly levered. And they've had some earnings upgrades over the past couple months. And so it's been very positive for the stock. They've been on a tear over the past year, up from 40 to 65. And that's up 54% in the past 52 weeks. Year to date, they're up 21%. And a lot of analysts are saying they're a buy. From a relative valuation perspective, it's modest. 4.3 price to book relative to a 4.1 over the past 5 years. Their forward-looking price to earnings is only a 12.1. You know, I think the valuation is fine. I think this is a strong industrial name. And I think, really, honestly, I don't see anything wrong here. So I like this name. I approve of this name. Thanks for the call. Now, here's another YouTube question that we got the other day, and that is, what is your thoughts on PAYC for a long-term hold? So this is an interesting one. PAYC is Paycom, and if you run a business, you may know what Paycom is, and it is exactly what it sounds like, which is a software as a service that helps pay people. And so it's HR software, and their revenue was exploding from 2018 all the way out into 2022. It doubled. But it's kind of tapered off in terms of its growth, and the stock has taken a hit in the past year, down 30%. And it's really self-inflicted wounds, if anything. And that is, they came out with this automated software, Betty maybe, B-E-T-I, something like that. And so they started cannibalizing their own business. Yeah, Betty is what it's called. They started cannibalizing their own business. And because of moving towards this automated software, people didn't need some of their more expensive services. Their revenue growth kind of stalled a little bit, and it's come back down to earth. So that decent growth over the past 5 years has kind of tapered off a little bit. From a debt perspective, $75 million on a $11 billion market cap company. So really no debt. They bought back a bunch of shares last year. So they're not issuing a bunch of shares to finance their business. They have good cash flow. They have stable profitability, and the relative strength dropped off a cliff after July. But from a relative valuation perspective, they're still trading at a forward-looking PDE of 25. Their price to book is almost 9, which is down below their 5-year average of an astounding 24, and that's because the price has fallen precipitously over the past year. But if you're looking for a company that has stable growth, that has excellent growth, that's the only time you would pay something like 25. This growth is tapering off according to the company itself. So this current valuation, this current relative multiple, I would have to pass. Thanks for the comment. Now let's shift back to something else I wanted to talk about today, which is something that I guess a lot of people invest in, and this rule won't really affect them, but it's still interesting because it may affect businesses. And that is that there's a development from the SEC shaking the almost $700 billion U.S. institutional prime money market fund sector. And so these new changes that are set to kick in October were mandated and designed to safeguard retail investors and institutional investors alike by imposing a mandatory fee on large redemptions for money market funds. And so this change would notably shrink the sector should it go into effect, and it looks like it will go into effect. Capital Group and Vanguard are leading the charge, planning to either shutter their institutional prime money market funds or convert them to different fund types, which would affect about $220 billion in assets. It's a lot. And so all of this, like I mentioned earlier, is in the wake of what happened in 2020, which is very large outflows as the pandemic was coming out in full force, which caused asset sales at a discount and losses to the remaining investors in the fund. And so this new rule, by requiring institutional prime funds to levy a fee on withdrawals, should it exceed 5% of total net assets in a single day, hopes to deal with that problem. But several large managers are opting out, because it's operationally challenging, for one. And also, anytime you add frictions to management, it makes it more expensive. There's increased cost. And so what are they going to do? Well, a lot of them want to shift to government debt-focused vehicles that are exempt from the new regulations. And that could put an impact on investor portfolio diversification. But there's also another thing to consider, which is what happens to the commercial paper asset class, which would then see some diminishing demand. And so the industry itself is bracing for this reduced demand that could have potential effects on company financing that are reliant on commercial paper for day-to-day business. And so the SEC says, no, we're gonna maintain this stance because we care first and foremost about risk mitigation and the liquidity needs in stress periods, which is a fine stance to have. But I think overall the lesson here is to think about the knock-on effects, the complexity of a regulatory approach, which leave a lot of firms scrambling to adapt. Because yes, your primary concern is the liquidity of the system, the stability of the system, especially in times of stress, which, by the way, are times you don't see coming, right? That's what happened in 2020. You didn't see it coming. Massive redemptions, assets sold at a loss. But you also have to balance that with how it affects the large institutions that are then paying the fees, the cost of managing those funds, the frictions that you're putting into place, the regulatory burden, if you will, and also what it's going to do to companies, because commercial paper is a big part of the corporate financing system. This is Invest Talk, and our 24/7 voice bank never closes. That's why we call it 24/7. So when you wake up at 3 a.m. and you think, what's going on with Apple? Call me. Don't call me directly, please. I'll be sleeping at 3 a.m. But call our InvestTalk voice bank, which is 888-99-CHART. So let's hear another question that came in right now.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling about two companies. I was hoping you could take a look for me. They both kind of run up, but seems like they pulled back to the 20-day moving average. First one is MLM, Martin Marietta Materials. It's a material, building material, basic material company. The second one is LIN, the Materials Specialty Chemicals. I think it's Lind PLC. If you can take a look at these, I believe you guys are high on the sector. Just want to see if you think it's overpriced or if you think this is a good buy point. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Let's take a look at Lind PLC first. It's a chemical material company. It looks like 90% of the revenue comes from industrial gases. And You know, the caller hinted at it, and that is, it's pretty expensive. It's trading at a forward-looking PD of 28. Its price to book is 5.5, which is pretty expensive for a materials company. And, you know, its revenue growth has been 17%. It looks like it dropped off a little bit. Last year, they actually lost some share of their revenue, which is never a good thing. And their net income margin has actually been increasing. So they've been cutting costs wherever they can. Maybe their input costs have gone down overall. That's a good thing. But 17% growth is probably not sustainable. Therefore, would you pay a premium like 28%? No. It looks like a good company from a first glance, but again, it's more than about a good company. It's about a good company at a fair price. So let's take a look at the other one, which is MLM, Martin Marietta. It's trading at a forward-looking price to earnings of 27. So pretty much the same price level. Its price to book is 4.7, a little bit more reasonable, but still in the same range. And this is with this revenue growth of about 9.8%. You know, if I'm thinking about one of these companies, this is tough. I would probably go with Martin Materials. It's a little bit cheaper. Its revenue growth that it's pricing in is less than the other one. Its margins could set to improve, but they've been pretty stable over the past 5 years. Its debt picture is modest, $4 billion on $37 billion market cap. But I think you don't have to pick one or the other, right? You can make a choice that says both of these companies are too expensive. They've had good run-ups. I like the sector. They're good companies to watch, but not right now. Thanks for the call. 2024 is humming along, as is this hour, and we are well into the second quarter, and you may have noticed we've been telling you for a while that a new market environment has taken hold, and it looks like we're right because inflation seems to be more persistent than people thought. And let me remind you that here at InvestTalk and at KPP Financial, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking, shared success, where we offer unbiased guidance, practice parallel investing, where we invest alongside our clients in investment strategies that we implement for ourselves. So I encourage you to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio assessment via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeeting, where you can send us a message anytime through investtalk.com. This is InvestTalk, and our work continues in 30 seconds. I hope that you call in before the top of the hour so we can hear about your finance and investment questions.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I opened a starter position in Signet Jewelers today. I'm curious what you guys think of the fundamentals and the technical setup, and if it's something that's possibly worth adding to, or perhaps maybe just keeping it as a small position. Thank you much.
Okie doke. So SIG, S-I-G, is Signet Jewelers, and unsurprisingly, they engage in the retail of diamond jewelry. So let's take a step back first and foremost and say, when would you expect this company to do well? When people have disposable income to buy diamond jewelry, which may not be the case now, but let's look at the fundamentals. So their sales growth has fallen off, not unsurprisingly. Looks like their fiscal year end, they were down from $7.8 billion to $7.1 billion after having some decent growth in the pandemic. Again, people built up savings in 2020 and 2021. Maybe they spent it in 2022. So that could be why they had some revenue growth over those years. Still, their net margins have improved, so they've definitely cut down on some costs up to 11.3% from 4.8%. So from a profitability perspective, stable to improving, I'd say, over the past 3 years, so that's good. But their cash flow has fallen, which is definitely a negative. Their relative strength is pretty high, so from a momentum perspective, they're doing pretty well. And they only have $1.2 billion in debt on a $4 billion market cap company. I have no problem with the company in terms of where it's valued right now, 2.1 to 1.9. Their fundamentals look pretty decent. It looks like their strength is improving as well. If you opened a position, I don't see why you should sell the position. For a long-term hold, yes. In the medium term, I would be a little bit worried if their revenue growth is sustainable or if you would see some paring back in terms of their sales, just given what potentially could be even more diminished consumer spending power. Thanks for the call. That was Invest Talk, and I am Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now to 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
You guys listened. You called in. Let's go to Luke in Wisconsin, who has a question about VRSN. You own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, hey, Luke. I've owned this one for a while and looking to potentially add. I'd just like to know your opinion at the current price, if it's good for a long-term 10-plus year hold. I know there's some concerns over domain name registration potentially trending downward with, you know, apps becoming the primary source of internet, I guess. And I'd be curious on your take on that, as this company practically owns the rights to .com and .net domain registrations. It seems like they're doing everything right, you know, share buybacks, great balance sheet, high return on invested capital, but let me know your opinion. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So VRSN, for people that don't know, is VeriSign Inc. And like the caller said, the caller, whose name is the same name as my name, provides domain name and registry services. They're kind of one of the infrastructure backbones of the early 2000s into 2010s into 2020s economy. And he was right in that there is some concern about the migration of everything to the app sphere off of the traditional internet as it has been. But from a fundamental perspective, the company looks good. It's got very little debt, $19 billion market cap. The cash flow looks great. They've been buying back shares over the past 5 years. They've been paying a pretty stable... Oh, that's weird. That says there's a dividend. They're not paying a dividend. Anyway, they're not paying a dividend, but they have been buying back shares, which is good. They're returning capital to shareholders when they can't use it themselves. I would be a little bit concerned about the future of this company in terms of its overall revenue growth, but it's really pricing in a revenue growth of about 4% right now, which seems reasonable given the prevailing environment. I think it's fine for a long-term hold. I think it still may come down a little bit. It still looks a little expensive, even relative to the tech sector. It's trading at 23 right now. So if you wanted to invest a little bit more, I would wait, but I don't think the company's going away. I think it's a fine business. I think it's run well. I think it's capitalized well. Thanks for the call. Let's do two in a row. Paul in Palm Desert, who has a question about GDX.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I hold some shares and have been for a little while in that ETF, and I have a fair gain. It's in a well diversified portfolio. I just wanted to get your take on, would you continue to hold that ETF, or where do you think it's going from here?
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, this is a good segue to the last talking point about gold. And that is to say that there is an increasing amount of demand, not just from government bodies in the wake of what has happened in Eastern Europe with the U.S. sanctioning Russia, and so they're worried about holding too much dollar reserves, but also retail investors. My favorite wholesaler, which I teased at the beginning of the show, Costco, is selling like $200 million a month worth of gold. So there's a lot of gold demand out there from a lot of sides. And because of that, I think holding a gold miners ETF is a fine investment, with the caveat that you're not overly exposed to it. And again, no one ever went broke taking profit. So anytime you are up and you want to rebalance into something else, if you feel as though you have a little bit overweight more than you're comfortable with, go for it. But I don't see any reason to sell it wholesale.
Great. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head out for the day, again, great segue. I promise we didn't plan that, but that was perfect. Let's talk a little bit about gold. And I already mentioned the government bodies that have been buying gold and why they've done it. But the more interesting part is really that last part, not the institutional investors, not the pension funds and the mutual funds, but you, people who believe that economically there's a little bit of instability on the horizon, and therefore they see gold as a safe haven for their money. So that intriguing example that I mentioned is Costco. And they started selling, for any of you who are members, gold bars. I remember getting an ad for it. And guess what happened? They sold out almost immediately. Wells Fargo estimates that Costco's customers are purchasing between $100 million and $200 million worth of gold a month, a trend that reflects growing consumer interest in tangible investments amid rising inflation. So the data is telling us that inflation is persistently higher. People believe it is persistently higher. They are buying a lot of gold from Costco. Interesting times we live in. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to review and rate us on iTunes. Remember to tell your friends that the Invest Talk podcast is now available for free in video form, where you can look at all the charts and data that we look at, and the only cost is you have to look at our faces. I'm sorry. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.